The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 4th of December, 2020. On the podcast today, John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, talks about their acquisition of Epic Stream and provides an update on Gfinity Digital Media. Also on the podcast, on their first day of dealings, David Minchin, CEO of Helium One, HE1 is the ticker there, explains the significance of their large-scale, high-grade primary helium project in Tanzania. And Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about why there's a bullish feel to the markets. And at the end of the podcast, of course, I have two lists for you. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and top five most liked RNSs. You can check out both these lists, top 10 version of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. You'll see lots of other content there. In fact, there's an article there on Helium One and on Gfinity, on 88 Energy, plus our COVID-19 index. What is the biggest rise of the day? It's N4 Pharma, and that is up 41%. Is that on the back of yesterday? Wow. I'll check that out, but that was a big yesterday. Biggest fall of the day is Silence Therapeutics, down 3.7% to 419. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, G-F-I-N is ticker there. John, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, always pleased to be here.
Yes, and you've acquired Epic Stream, and you've provided an update on Gfinity Digital Media and the formal sales process, which you can't really talk too much about, but we'll get into the other two bits. And as always, John, in a sentence, if someone's listening right now and thinking, Gfinity, I've never heard of them, just explain what the business is about, please.
Okay, Gfinity is a leading esports and competitive gaming entertainment company, and we work with many of the world's leading game publishers, sports rights holders, brands, and media companies.
Excellent stuff. Now, Gfinity Digital Media pretty much didn't exist before May. It's growing very quickly. We'll talk about that in a bit. But you've chosen to acquire a website and social media channels to expand. We'll call it GDM, Gfinity Digital Media. Why have you done this, John?
Yeah, our strategy is based on three pillars: what we own, what we co-own, which is really partnerships, and building communities for others through our tech IP and content creation expertise and brilliance, I like to say. So the GDM, or Gfinity Digital Media Group, is what we own. And this is a growing community of gamers that are choosing to engage with Gfinity day after day through our web and social channels. So the team's doing a brilliant job of growing the monthly user base. It's 14 million in November, up from 12 million in October, deepening engagement and maximizing the monetization opportunities that that presents for us. We grow the GDM in three ways. Firstly, organically, and we've got a stellar record of growing at pace and monetizing. So I'll give you an example there of Stealth Optional, which has gone from zero to nearly 500,000 monthly users in under a year, and a CPM on a par with our other sites. And we also launched racinggames.gg last week. So that's what we're doing and working very hard organically. Then we look at partnerships, which is working with large publishers that want to reach the gamer audience and are looking for our expertise to do so. And once we do that, we sort of connect our audiences. So we're currently working with Snack Media, the owner of Give Me Sport, which is a very popular website, on a couple of projects. And then acquisitions. So identifying the sites that complement what we already own, and that we can help scale quickly, and in doing so, help drive the value of GDM. So Epic Stream, the business we acquired and announced this morning, fits the profile of what we're looking to do perfectly.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Epic Stream, you know, and exactly why you acquired them. You said there, but tell us a bit more about them.
Yeah, first and foremost, you know, we've acquired the site because of the founders, this guy Francis Bayog and Brian McCormick. Yeah, they've got a passion for geek culture and have really got an entrepreneurial drive. You know, these guys, they're great. And EpicStream.com and the accompanying Facebook and social channels, they focus on sci-fi movies, television, video games, collectible cards, comic books, and you know, in those areas. And these guys are they're really big into their Marvel as well, so they'll win Mastermind on that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the website's got 600,000 monthly users, and while the Facebook and social media platforms has over 6 million likes. So Francis and Brian have got aspirations to grow. They just needed a partner to make it happen. And we could see straight away that by bringing Epic Stream into the GDM, we could transform both their user base and the financial trajectory of the business. So to give you an example, you know, while Epic Stream's most popular Facebook page, I think it has roughly about 10 times more likes than Gfinity's Facebook pages, in terms of their revenue, they're comparable. You know, this is because Epic Stream's not fully utilized video content, and Facebook is basically a video distribution a platform. Mm-hmm. But they haven't utilized the video content. We do. And this is something that we can apply very quickly and simply to their business and help them in that space. So in addition, we're going to deploy our sort of SEO search engine optimization strategy, our technology toolkit that allows for sort of advertising optimization, and all the techniques that we've been using that have helped our sites already grow so quickly in the past 12 months. So I think combined, utilizing our in-house expertise, we can build at pace on the foundation that Francis and Brian have already put in place, and this will help turbocharge the growth of GDM.
Yeah. So basically, it won't take long to optimize that and get them churning out revenue as they're supposed to, equivalent to the sites you own already. So how do you decide then? Because that one there you just said there, a niche site is perfect because you get a lot of engagement in that. How do you decide which sites to go for? And do you have plans for acquiring more?
The level of engagement with Epic Stream and through those channels is spectacular. It's really very good. So our strategy is to grow through a number of channel ways, but also very clearly through acquisition. So Epic Stream is the first, and we're going to build on this. So with the criteria we use to evaluate where to play is quite clear, but the starting point for us is always the gamer and importantly the gamer lifestyle. Yeah. So when you look at it from a gamer lifestyle sort of perspective, there's multiple opportunities open to us. So whether it's board games, mobile games, music, fashion, and so on, there's a hot, once you're into that world, there is a number of ways of touching the gamer at different moments of the of their day and getting more mind space from them. So when we look at it, the skill for us is finding the sites and the teams behind them. There may be a really good culture fit, which is important. They've reached a certain size, have got the capacity to grow if they could do so quicker with the right level of support and investment. So we've got our I like to call them gamer first business leaders out talking to these owners and people that have started sites and hobbyists, etc. Connecting with them, trying to really understand what their needs are and what their aspirations are, and find ways to work together. So I think there are lots of talented people who have created sites and communities who want to be part of something bigger, but don't want to give up their identity, which I think is really important. So we understand and respect that, and I think that gives us our size as well, and of where we are, that gives us a competitive advantage when talking to these individuals. So we've got a model that allows them to benefit financially if they're successful in hitting the targets that we set on a scale that they'd also find difficult to do on their own. So Epic Stream's our first, but it's not going to be our last.
Yeah, good. Okay, and let's talk about generally Gfinity Digital Media. I tweeted there. I said this part of the business didn't exist before May. You launched in May, just a third of the business, generated 130K in September, exceeded 275 in October, and on track to deliver 2 million for the full year. So, what's driving this success then, John?
Yeah, just that was the 275 in November. Just to make sure that, but November was another record month. You're right. We started. We had sites in for a while, but GDM with the decision to bring that all together and really create the media group, was just a few months ago, and we're now up to 14 million users in November, which was up from roughly 12 million in October. As you say, the revenue was over 275,000 for the month, which is a significant increase over the previous month. And so we're seeing an exceptional performance. The team is doing a really outstanding job. We have plans and targets, and we're in line with our plan, as you say, and the goal is to make sure we get to that 2 million of revenue in our financial year, which you go back a year, and there was minimal revenue, so it's fast growing. November was a bumper month due to the new console launches and the peripherals and all the different things that go with it. So we've been preparing for this, and I think I've said to you before when we've spoken, making sure our sites were optimized, that they were fast, and that ads were loading well, and that the user experience was improved, and the team has managed to do that. But we've also benefited from sort of campaigns for brands that are spending now in the digital media group. And in November, we ran the first time working with Cadbury, and we created a program there around Heroes, the Heroes brand. So we were getting revenue that way. So the GDM's growing in the value it presents to brands that want to reach the gamer audience as well, and that puts us in good stead for the future. So I think what's key, and my challenge to the team all the time, is making sure, keeping a finger on the pulse of what gamers care about, staying focused on the user experience, making people want to come back and time and again to engage with us, and also, but importantly, be entrepreneurial in finding new tools like quizzes and the accelerated mobile pages, AMP, to maximize the revenue opportunities that are in front of us. So I think we're still really at the very early stages of development of GDM, and that's really what makes it exciting.
Yeah. And you mentioned Cadbury there, and I've seen that on Twitter and stuff. And so what did you actually do for the brand there? Are they happy with it?
Yeah, no, it's really good. So what we created for Cadbury sits in that our pillar of building communities for others. So that strategic focus that we have there. So, we designed and coming through the their advertising and media agencies that we're working closely with. They chose Gfinity to design and develop an influencer-led gaming competition. It's called the Heroes League, which is also important because in addition to designing and developing it, then Cadbury then allocating digital media money to spend on Gfinity Digital Media Group, which is an added benefit. So what we did for them was it was pretty cool, actually, using influencers teaching their parents, and in one case grandparent, how to play Street Fighter, and then battling out on Twitch channels and creating supporting sort of shoulder content that was used to sort of really engage with those influencers, communities, and broaden the appeal of the program. And it was a really outstanding show. And I have to say, even I'm not saying my Mrs. Clark doesn't usually want to sit down and watch all the esports activities that I like to enjoy. And this occasion, for an hour and a half, sitting there with a box of Heroes on her lap and thoroughly enjoying watching the game, and saying, "Well, I want to play some Street Fighter." So it was good in our household as well. But I've always sort of looked at this and say that when the big consumer brands really embrace gaming, then it will take it to a much broader mainstream audience. And I think this is now starting to happen. During November, we did a League of Legends broadcast for Red Bull, and they called it Simplified, and we did it from the Gfinity Arena. But that was certainly, there's hundreds of millions of fans out there that love League of Legends. But there's also lots of people out there that would like to watch it if they understood what it really was and how it worked and the intricacies of it. And Red Bull recognized that, and they asked us and commissioned us to create a show that happened at the same time as the live final was happening. But simplified it, talk it in lay people's terms so that more people can understand it, engage and enjoy it. So I think that's another good example. We were reappointed by the Premier League to deliver the EPL, which was last week or so ago. And also in November, Yeah, we delivered some outstanding sort of shows for Formula One esports series, you know, all done remotely using our virtual production tech IP. So there's been lots of good work and activity in the building communities for other strategic pillar, in addition to what we're doing in the Gfinity Digital Media Group.
Yeah, well, the brands don't get bigger than that. You know, you've got, like, say, Premier League, Formula One, Red Bull, Cadbury's. It seems to be going in the right direction.
Not doing bad.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's, you know, we can't really mention it, but it's there and it's in the background, the formal sales process, this part of the strategic review that you did a while back. Is there anything you can say about that or not?
It's very difficult for me to put any colour to other than what we said in the announcement. You know, it's progressing as planned. We're engaging in conversations. And we are evaluating what the best options are to accelerate the growth of the business, and we will provide updates as and when appropriate. I can't really say any more than that, Justin, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but apart from that, I mean, you're quite happy with the way Gfinity is operating, John. It seems like it's going in the right direction, doesn't it?
You know, I do. I look back a year ago at, or even, you know, back in March, where we, you know, I think I say to people, when I took over as CEO, and on the day that we went into lockdown, and it was there to go. We had raised money at the time, and we've achieved, and the team has achieved, an incredible amount to get us on a solid foundation, as you say. When you look at what's been achieved in a short period of time, you know, we've got a very clear strategy in place, and the team's working hard against each of those strategic pillars and delivering great work for the people that we work for, and bringing exciting opportunities like Epic Stream into the fold. So, you know, it's an interesting time, an exciting time for us.
Marvellous stuff. John, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to it. Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Minchin, Chief Executive Officer of Helium One. HE1 is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations on listening today. Exciting day for you. And, you know, we'll dig into a bit of detail here. But before we do, just for people who's never heard of you, I've seen you actually mentioned already on social media. But for people not familiar with Helium One, can you just give us a brief overview as to what it's about, please, David?
Helium One is an exploration company focused on developing the Rukwa Helium Project in Tanzania. That is a globally strategic premium helium supply to resolve the supply-constrained helium market heading into the next century.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, and I say, not many people know about helium, or they've heard of it, but don't know what it's for. So tell us why helium is so important and what it's, you know, used for, if you could, David.
Oh, helium is critically important. It really is one of the unsung materials that fuels the modern economy. Mm. It's got a number of important and irreplaceable features which makes it completely unsubstitutable in the functions that it's used in. Mm. For instance, it's got the lowest boiling point of any gas, which means if you want to cool something to within 5 degrees of absolute zero, for instance, take advantage of its superconducting properties, then you need to use helium. Now, one of the circumstances you'll see that I use most often is in MRI scanners, which consume about 20% of helium worldwide at the moment. And that number is growing as the amount of MRI scanners moves from being a technology which is used just in the first world to being used around the world. For instance, China are looking to double the number of MRI scanners. But where's all that extra helium going to come from?
Yeah.
It's not just based on one technology, but what happens is a lot of helium is used, you know, a little bit is used in a lot of different applications. A lot of tech, which used to be high tech, but is now normal tech, things like data centers, you know, there's a lot of helium used there in the hard drives, and also in various superconducting things which need to happen in the data centers. So Google and Netflix are buying a huge amount of helium. SpaceX are buying a huge amount of helium. It's got the smallest pore space of any gas. So when you need to purge your fuel out of the rockets, you need to use helium to purge that fuel, because otherwise it'll be a catastrophic effect of unpurged fuel. fuel residual in the boosters. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's one of those things which in the modern world you think, well, you know, do we use a lot of helium? The answer is yes, and the amount which we're going to use is going up all of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, I didn't know that. I'm learning it already. So and currently, you know, what's happening in the helium market?
Really is a critically undersupplied market. So historically, about 20 or 25% of helium has come from the US Federal Reserve, which was a large strategic stockpile built up during the Cold War. And that's been depleted over the last sort of 10 to 15 years as the government's been closing it down. And it closed its door as of last year. So as of last year, 20% of global supply has come off the market. Right. Now, the other sources of supply is formed as a low-grade byproduct from hydrocarbon. So from oil and gas, taking helium out of the reserve at anything between 0.3 and 0.05% helium. Now, these are good long-term supplies, but they're completely inflexible. The Qataris can't just turn up the amount of oil and gas that they produce because it's a multi-billion dollar development to do that. Mm. And you know, it's just not economically worthwhile for extracting 0.05% of helium. Yeah. So what we've seen is the helium price shooting up. It's up over 130% at the moment, hitting around $280 per MCF. Nice. But we're hearing reports of end users paying up to $40 a litre, $1,500 per MCF, cool. Which is, you know, as we've said, it's completely irreplaceable. And if SpaceX are launching a satellite into space, you know, they might have to pay for 10,000 litres of helium, but that's the cheapest part of the whole launch.
Yeah. And so tell us about your assets then. Why they're so key and where you're at with them.
So we are a primary helium resource, which is not related to helium to hydrocarbon. Sorry, it comes out as 90% nitrogen and 10% helium. That's what we're measuring from seeps at the surface. Mm-hmm. So I'll just give you some background. So helium is formed in ancient continental crust over hundreds of millions of years. And it gets released when that crust is broken open for the very first time. And that's happening at the East African Rift Valley in Tanzania, where the western limb of the East African Rift is opening ancient continental crust billions of years old and is releasing helium. Now, we've had first mover advantage in Tanzania to secure 4,500 square kilometres of licence area and picked up all of the areas where we've got helium seeps around sediment-filled rift valleys with the potential to trap and contain high-grade helium resources. We've got the largest unrisked prospective primary helium resource in the world of 138 billion cubic feet, which, to put that into context and to sort of explain why we're so key, the in-situ value of that at today's prices of $280 per MCF would be over $36 billion.
Yeah, wow. And so you mentioned that you're in Tanzania. I know some people may raise their eyebrows at sort of, you know, certain places in Africa. How do you find that, and you know, what's it like operating there?
Look, I mean, Tanzania has had its difficulties, but it's important to remember that it's still the fourth largest gold producer in Africa. It's still the home to several multinational companies and listed junior companies. It's still a jurisdiction which is a natural resource jurisdiction where things can get done. Mm-hmm. We've been operating there for the last five years. We've got great relations with the government, and that was demonstrated earlier this year where we had all of our licenses renewed as of September 2020. They're valid for another 3 years with an option to extend them for another 2 years. So we've really found we've got the right people to work there.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking forward, how much are you raising, and what are your plans for it for the year ahead?
Oh, we've got a big, big year ahead. So we've just raised £6 million as part of a listing on in London. We actually went out for four, but it was massively oversubscribed. In under a week, we closed the book on £8.5 million and, of hard offers. We decided to take six off the table because that's the amount that gets us fully funded for expiration and to make sure that we complete our expiration program. So we're starting the year with an infill seismic campaign over our priority targets. That's going to give us a lot of extra data and a lot of extra resolution for our drilling, which we're planning to do to start sort of end of Q1, big beginning of Q2 next year. So we're doing three slimline exploration holes. We're using a mineral rig because they're cheaper than large hydrocarbon rigs, and we don't like to waste money. Also, helium's a much higher value gas than liquid natural gas, so it's valued about 100 times more. So you don't need to drill so deep to find a commercial flow rate. So we'll be looking to get those results out throughout Q2 and hopefully see some significant share price appreciation as we move from being an explorer with a concept to being a developer with a proven reserve.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, listen, you know, congratulations on today, on listening today, and congratulations on joining the Vox platform here. So while you're there on the platform, you'll have a big follow button next to your logo. So, you know, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies. So get on that list, David. Get some people now hitting that follow button. Give us three reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Absolutely. So, number one, helium is a critical mineral. It's a supply-constrained market that's seeing prices going up dramatically. Number two, we're the only primary helium company with a globally strategic resource which can resolve that supply-constrained situation for the next 100 years plus. And number three, there aren't many opportunities for a retail investor in London to get involved in a globally strategic resource at this early stage. Most resources of this size and nature have either been in production for 100 years or are tightly held in private hands where you can't get into them. And certainly to get into them at this valuation offers some significant upside as we bring this from being an exploration concept to being a developer.
Excellent stuff, David. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, very well, in good health, I'm pleased to say. Justin, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm looking at the Fear and Greed Index, which the lowest I've ever seen it get to was in March. It went down to 2, and that generally, looking back, is a good time to buy. Right now, it's at 85, which is extreme greed.
Mr. Greedy, that doesn't sound so good, does it?
No, it's a contrarian index, isn't it? So people, essentially, when everyone's greedy, everyone's in the market, so you're thinking, okay, it can only go one way, sort of, really, you know, so...
I think that's a good point, and it does, intriguingly, it does feel like a bull market in some way, which is, again, probably why you need to be a little bit careful, because you've got, India's at an all-time high, Japan's at a 29-year high, copper, great bellwether for economic activity, 7-year high, iron ore at a 7-year high, and the other intriguing one is the dollar, haven asset, at 2.5-year low, intriguingly. So, yeah, it does feel as if sentiment is... lopsided.
Why is the dollar at the moment? Why is the dollar weakening then? What's happening there?
I think people just treat it as a. I think a lot of it's treated as a haven asset.
Yeah.
And in times of stress, look, it's the world's reserve currency. It's backed by the world's biggest economy, biggest bond market, biggest stock market, and it's home to the world's only real military superpower. So it is the haven, the world's reserve currency. It's a haven, therefore. And in times of stress, people tend to flock to it. It's weakening now. I think partly because the world's just markets are just more confident, and so they don't feel the need. You know, gold's come off the top a little bit, the dollar's going down. Yeah. I think there's another reason, which is that if you look at the US federal debts, let's face it, are going through the ceiling. And although there is still logjam in terms of what the stimulus plan will be in America, the debate isn't over whether there will be stimulus and more borrowing. It's just a matter of how much. Mm-hmm. And I think with the Democrats getting in, I think there's a sense that the spending taps, not that they're exactly tight under the Republican Trump, but that they will run loose. And the third one is that if you look, America's trade deficit is going up and up. So Trump spent 4 years saying I was going to eliminate the trade deficit. Nah. It's basically back to its all-time highs. American consumers are sucking in huge amounts of imports, and that means that dollars are flowing out. Now, from a global perspective, that is actually a good thing. And yeah. that comes down to Professor Robert Triffin, if you know him. He coined the concept of the Triffin dilemma, which is America, all right, it is home to the world's reserve currency, but the price that it pays is that America has to run a trade deficit. Because if America runs a trade surplus, dollars are sucked into America, the dollar goes up, and then the whole world's got a dollar shortage, which means it then can't afford to pay its dollar-denominated debts. So, oddly enough, America actually has to run a trade deficit, and from the world's perspective, a weak dollar is good because it means dollars are flowing out, it means that everybody's got enough dollars to pay their dollar debts, it makes, you know, and commodities are priced in dollars, so it makes them cheaper. So, oddly, from a global fundamentals business or financial markets fundamentals perspective, weak dollar equals healthy and normal. Yeah. And if you look at the dollar since Nixon took it off the gold standard in 1971, I mean, there are some swing, there are some big gains. If you look at the DXY index, the Dixie, I think the dollar peaked at about 160 in 1985 before the Plaza record, when the G5 then agreed to universally revalue it. But it's now at about, it then peaked at 120 after the financial crisis. It's now about 90. And the long run trend is basically down, because and you can run it against America's debts. And the more America borrows, the higher its trade deficit, the further the dollar goes down on a long term trend basis. So it's actually probably a really, really helpful trend for financial markets. The dollar is weak at the moment. And whether Trump's leaving office or not, we still don't know officially. Biden's not going to be, you know, the electoral college hasn't met yet. I think it does so on the 14th. But in terms of making America's trade deficit disappear, that's one thing that Trump didn't definitely do. But when it looked like he was, and the dollar was strengthening, financial markets had a wobble. So Triffin may well indeed have been onto something all of 60 years ago, intriguingly.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, I'm just looking at events now. I think stimulus is pretty much going to happen, isn't it? And then you've got...
It's just a matter of how much.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the next positive movement for or milestone, a bit of news, will be some kind of approval from the FDA for a vaccine. Maybe that will help the markets a little bit. And I think
Europe as well, because the Europeans haven't given approval to any of them yet either. That's expected in the next... months, 6 weeks or something. So.
Yeah, and I think so. We'll have a nice run, but I think we'll have a wobble. Every year has a wobble, I suppose. But I think when the figures we are sort of realizing we're not back to the normal yet, halfway through 2021. You know, we're still beyond, you know, not even where we were at in 2019. I think the markets may have a wobble somewhere along the line, but hopefully we're getting there, aren't we?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I've seen a paper today. There's talk of Pfizer not already having some supply chain issues and not necessarily being able to provide all of the doses they were hoping to in 2020. So I think there'll inevitably be some issues, you know, because, you know, manufacturing the drug, they've got to get the raw materials in, then they've got to ship the stuff. We know that shipping is not easy because of the temperatures it's got to be kept at. And, you know, as Private Eye rather drolly put in its last issue, you know, Matt, and this is Private Eye's view, by the way, and it's just them taking the mic. They don't like anybody, so don't think they're picking on anybody in particular.
Yeah.
But Private Eye saying, oh, well, Matt Hancock, I absolutely promise you we will cock up the vaccine. I absolutely guarantee we will find a way to do it wrong. We have bought the ice cream vans to ship the vaccine around in from Pfizer, and we are working on it. We got them from a breaker's yard in Aberystwyth for £500, and I can guarantee you we'll do everything as badly as we've done everything else. That's Private Eye's view. But I think there will be stumbles, because I don't think the economy is going to go back in a V shape, and some companies and some sectors and industries are still under extreme duress. And as you say, when that greedy index gets to 85, it's the old Buffett thing: be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful. And right now, there's not a lot of fear out there, so it won't take much for people to reconsider. But again, you know, you've got M&A in the UK, you've got people chasing after G4S, you've got Airbnb and DoorDash looking to IPO in the States. I mean, that intrigues me. That they're really looking to, you know, if you'll forgive the expression, dash it out before Christmas. It makes me think that they think they're going to get a pretty fat price, because why the big hurry otherwise? Particularly when, in Airbnb's case, let's face it, business isn't exactly as good as it has been. DoorDash, I can understand a bit more, because they're thriving under the current circumstances. Both are seen as long-term secular growth stories, but Airbnb would benefit from a return to normality. DoorDash is probably going to be in a stronger position if things take a bit of a while, funnily enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, you know, looking forward, It's funny at the moment because it's a rotation of stocks, and you know the tech had the run.
Still happening.
But at what stage will the beaten down stocks have a breather? Because you know, actually now something like TUI, for example, have a good up day, then a very bad and down day, then up day. It's very volatile at the moment. But you know,
Rolls Royce was up 15% yesterday on the back of what didn't look like. All right, talking about getting back into the narrow-bodied engine market. I mean, you know, it wasn't a fat lot of news, but I guess the really beaten-down names like those, they're effectively warrants on economic recovery because they're so beaten down, and they were almost being priced for failure at one stage, you know, severe distress. So that they will be the real litmus test of whether of how well things are going because they are so highly geared into any minor degree in upturning activity. And I guess the aerospace stocks, I'll be looking forward to the Boeing 737 MAX making its return as well at some stage now that that seems to have been cleared by the American regulators.
Yeah. My thing
I think value will keep going, but again, it's not going to do it in a straight line. And it started out performing gently in July, and it's just become much more pronounced since Pfizer Monday. But I think that and if you look at 2000, you know, and again, you can run the comparison between the ETFs in the States, the QQQ, which is the NASDAQ 100, X Financials, and the IWN, which is the Russell 2000 Value ETF. And you divide the price of one by the other, and you look at how value ripped back in 2000. I mean, the degree to which we've moved back in 2020, not even started if we get a repeat of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And again, you know, it's like, you know, we always try and say invest for the long term, but we all
get sort of, at the minute.
I know. But we all kind of worry about the dips, you know?
But there's so many narratives around, you know, we've still got the Brexit to think about, we've got recovery at the moment. I mean, it's been a very, very narrative-led market, not just people pulling stock tickers out of a scramble bag like Dave Portnoy was doing over the summer, which I think, when the history books get written, probably still won't look very smart. But it's been like, oh, look, we're all locked down at home. Let's buy pizza delivery and pet care companies. And it's just, the simpler you kept it this year, the more you made, the more money you made. Oh, let's buy builders merchants. You know, big, we're all having our homes and nobody's going on holiday. So you would expect at some stage, some of those stocks that have done incredibly well just on the back of very straightforward narratives will find things a bit tougher because they're now looking, again, really quite pricey. And what value there is out there is in some of the stuff that still looks really a bit dangerous. But, you know, in the cave, it's the cave that you're frightened of that contains the treasure that you seek, as it were. So those are the things that if things do get better next year, you are going to have to hold your nose a little bit. But what I would say is you could do, you know, invest for the long term and don't go beyond your normal risk parameters. If those type of stocks aren't your normal type of stocks, highly leveraged, operationally, financially, don't play with them because if something does go wrong, you'll feel, you know, twice as sorry for yourself because you've done something you wouldn't have done normally, being greedy and chasing, and you then got caught out because it's whiplashed on you. So it's stick to your disciplines. And in terms of asset allocation, none of us know what's coming. If central banks knew what was coming, they still wouldn't be running policies that 11 years ago they said were emergency policies, right? So in that respect, none of us know what's coming. So don't go all in on one scenario. Have a little bit in the portfolio that protects you, that gets you involved in inflation and growth. Have a bit that protects you from deflation and have a little bit of cash for optionality and rainy day and bill money. And then you will sleep a bit more easy at night because you're not all in on one scenario, which may or may not develop.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Russ, thanks for that.
And it's been a pleasure.
Speak to you next week, hopefully.
I look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Royal Dutch Shell at four, Totally PLC. Royal Dutch Shell is up 3.27% to 14 quid. At four, Totally PLC up 3.5 to 21.75. At three, Shield Therapeutics, 108.5 pence, non-mover. Braveheart Investments at two, and that's 3.7% to 56.5. And at one, Helium One. Of course, David's on the podcast talking about helium. Very interesting as well. And that's most followed today. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Horizonte Minerals. At a Gwaia project operation update. At four, Deep Verge, direct shareholding. At three, Equals Group, director holding. At two, Feedback PLC, Bleeper to join DIT's first virtual event in India. And Gfinity acquires Epic Stream and Business Update is at number one. I'm just going to check out right now
Some of the most read as well. Let's have a look there. Most read is Horizonte at one. Araguaia Project at two is Gfinity. United Oil and Gas at three. United Energy, Polaren as well. Appointment of joint corporate broker. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.